Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, April 3rd. I'm Tanya Horlick reporting for KMUD. In today's news, Southern Humboldt housing opportunities provide shelter. Humboldt COVID cases on the rise with available testing. And loans now available for businesses in need. Stay tuned. News on these stories and much more during this 1 hour KMUD News special coming right up. Stay tuned. Earlier this Friday at 11:05 a.m., Humboldt Bay fire crews responded to a call for an extrication at the corner of E and Henderson Streets for a driver trapped in their vehicle after a traffic collision propelled the vehicle into the corner of a nearby building. Several emergency crews, the Eureka Police Department, City Ambulance, and Humboldt Bay Fire personnel responded to the scene and were able to safely extricate the patient, who sustained minor injuries. Humboldt Bay Fire would like to remind the public that, quote, even though there are currently less vehicles on the road, always drive defensively and scan ahead before crossing intersections, end quote. Both health officers in Humboldt and Mendocino counties have recently issued an updated recommendation to all residents. Humboldt's confirmed cases of COVID-19 are rising daily, while other nearby counties remain the same, at 4 or less cases. Lauren Schmidt reports.
Following new guidance from the California Department of Public Health, Humboldt County's Health Officer Dr. Teresa Frankovich and Mendocino County's Health Officer Dr. Mimi Duhan are now recommending members of the public to wear face coverings when leaving their homes on essential business. Both health officers initially advised that only people showing symptoms of the illness, shortness of breath, fever, and coughing, should wear masks, but they have since changed the recommendation. Even President Donald Trump has announced that all citizens of the United States should be wearing masks. Everyone who leaves their home for an essential activity should wear a face covering, such as a mask, scarf, bandana, or a similar garment. Most importantly, everyone should continue to remain home, except when conducting essential activities, and practice social distancing of 6 feet when outside of their homes, in addition to frequent hand washing. You can find those recommendations and additional advice and information on humboldtgov.org or mendocinocounty.org. KMUD News has been closely monitoring the local cases of COVID-19 in our community. Here are the local numbers. Del Norte County had its first confirmed case of the illness on Thursday. Although Trinity County hasn't updated their information since March 24th, the county is believed to have zero cases. In Mendocino County, there has been a total of 258 tests. 224 were negative and 4 are positive. 30 tests are pending. 2 patients have recovered, leaving Mendocino County with 2 active cases and 0 deaths or hospitalizations. Humboldt County has 4 new cases confirmed today, Friday, April 3rd. One case confirmed April 2nd was a sample from a person in a neighboring county whose test was conducted by the public health laboratory. That positive case has been deducted from yesterday's count, bringing the total number of Humboldt County residents who have tested positive to 40. There are 39 active cases, as one resident has recovered. However, 2 are currently hospitalized. Luckily, there have been 0 deaths. Out of the 40 cases, 18 had contact with a known case, 13 were travel-related, 6 community transmission, and 3 are under investigation. Around 84% of cases are located in or near Eureka, Arcata, McKinleyville, and Fortuna. 43% are male and 57% are female, with the mean age of 44. In this morning's COVID Minute on the Humco COVID YouTube page, Humboldt County's Health Officer Dr. Teresa Frankovich discussed the differences in testing rates across the state and why it seems Humboldt has a high rate of positive cases compared to other counties.
Hi, this is Dr. Terry Frankovich, Health Officer for Humboldt County. I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. The more people who are tested for COVID-19 in a population, the higher the likelihood that we will have individuals test positive. What's been hard for people to understand looking at the pandemic across the country and the state is that the testing rates are very different from place to place. So an area that is doing very little testing will have few positives. An area that's doing more testing will uncover more positives. So it's not particularly surprising that we are seeing more positives in our area, because when we look at Humboldt County, we are testing 405 people per 100,000 in our community. California has been testing about 70 per 100,000, and the United States about 287 per 100,000. So given this information, it's not surprising that Humboldt County is discovering a relatively high number of cases. That's what we would expect to find, but that's an important piece of our doing testing so that we can identify those cases and see where we are in this pandemic.
Dr. Frankovich recommends all community members to wear face coverings when leaving their homes. Quote, face masks may help decrease spread of infection within the community. However, they are not a substitute for social distancing, hand washing, and other measures, end quote. Humboldt residents who would like additional information can call the Humboldt County COVID hotline at 707-441-5000 or search Humboldt Health Alert online and sign up for notifications. Mendocino also has a hotline. The number is 707-234-6052. Or you can go to mendocinocounty.org to sign up for alerts and notifications. KMA News will continue to track this illness. You can visit our Facebook page to link to all of the resources. You can visit the KMA News Facebook page to find links to all of these resources. This has been Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD.
During the newscast, we received breaking news that the first known case of COVID-19 has been confirmed in Southern Humboldt. Redwoods Rural Health Center Director Tina Tweet Shibley sent a text message to our news department informing us that Redwoods Rural has had their first confirmed case of the illness. The message reads, quote, RRHC's board would like us to be transparent with the community. We have our first positive COVID-19 test in Southern Humboldt. All RRHC team members obtained specimen through drive-up testing and were wearing personal protective equipment. RRHC's team is working with public health to follow up with anyone who had direct contact with the individual who tested positive. Everyone in the community is encouraged to maintain recommended social distancing, regular hand washing, and other precautions, such as wearing masks. It's apparent our community isn't insulated from this type of disease. We are posting something on Facebook soon, too. Not a lot of information to disclose to the public due to patient privacy. RRHC will be able to answer questions as we learn more from public health in the week to come. End quote. To our knowledge, this is the first positive COVID-19 case in Southern Humboldt. RRHC board member Sheila O'Toole reflected, quote, this will definitely be a wake-up call for the community and hopefully save people from contacting the virus. We wish the best to this patient and hope they will recover fully, end quote. Public Health is expected to have more information next week. KMUD News will bring updates as information is released. Across the nation, deaths are mounting from COVID-19 that has a three-day doubling time and a 1-3% death rate in the United States. Kelly Lincoln brings us ideas for remaining virus-free in this report.
Just 5 weeks ago, the United States reported its first case of COVID-19. Today, there are 160,000 confirmed cases in the United States with nearly 3,000 deaths as of March 30th. Human understanding of the virus, the illness it causes, the manner it transfers from person to person, and how it attacks human bodies evolves daily. Diane Sawyer reported on MSNBC that nearly the entire scientific world is focused on the COVID-19 pandemic. COVID-19 is caused by a newly evolved coronavirus scientists named SARS-CoV-2. It is novel to the human species. Therefore, the human being has no innate immunity to it. If a person's immune system is compromised by age, inflammatory diseases such as diabetes, high blood pressure, or cardiovascular disease, or by other conditions that promote inflammation such as obesity, the risk of serious complications is increased dramatically. Researchers have not yet precisely identified which species the SARS-CoV-2 migrated through before it jumped to humans, although they have determined it occurred before the first 41 cases of COVID-19 were detected in China in December. Not all of those people were associated with the market or with each other. According to Epstein, this means there was community spread of the SARS-CoV-2 virus before that time, but no one yet knows for how long or from where it exactly originated. It is important to note that to date, all of the peer-reviewed research and fact-checked publications report the virus evolved spontaneously. Research of its RNA tells geneticists that it made a single leap from an animal to a person and spread globally from there. No credible source corroborates the rumor that the virus was produced in a laboratory as a bioweapon. It is a certainty that the transfer to the human population occurred relatively recently, and that this is a virus the human population has never seen before. No one has immunity. Every person who contacts the virus will be infected. 80% of people will have almost no symptoms, but they will be transferring the virus to others nonetheless. And about 10% of patients will require hospitalization for pneumonia. The transition through the illness is fairly rapid. Usually within 5 days of contacting SARS-CoV-2, a person will show COVID-19 symptoms. Nonetheless, the safety protocols have people who've been exposed wait 14 days in isolation to be sure they are virus-free. After symptoms such as a sore throat, fatigue, fever, or cough emerge, most people will have a flu, sometimes quite severe, for a few weeks. However, for the people who will struggle the hardest with COVID-19, they will generally begin to fall seriously ill within 7 to 10 days. As the virus migrates through the human population, the doubling time is generally about 3 days. So hospitals and medical systems are being taxed beyond their limit. To slow the spread of the virus, California initiated a stay-at-home order on March 19th. Social distancing saves lives by slowing the spread of the virus enough that hospitals have adequate supplies, beds, and personnel to treat every patient properly. And the importance of flattening the curve is very relevant to people who do not have COVID-19. If a person has a heart attack, a car accident, or breaks their leg while recreating, that person's ability to access care will be diminished if local hospitals are full or if medical staff is overwhelmed. Variables in populations will impact death rates around the globe. Italy has a high percentage of elderly in its population, and their death rate has been about 10%. The United States has a far younger demographic, thus far is showing a 1.3% fatality rate. But in the state of Louisiana, with its higher percentage of poverty and associated obesity and heart disease, there may be a very different experience and a much more severe loss. The best strategy until a vaccine and reliable treatments can be developed is to avoid the virus. The best practices include social distancing and hand washing in the United States. In Asia, best practices also include wearing a face mask in public. The nature of any coronavirus makes it vulnerable to soap. If the virus is in contact with an oil cutting surfactant like bar soap, dish soap, laundry detergent, or ordinary shampoo, it will be pulled apart as its fat layer disintegrates in about 20 to 30 seconds. But this amount of time is extremely important. The virus lives a long time on hard, dry surfaces like metal and smooth plastic. It is important to wash these surfaces often. Effective disinfectants include a 20% bleach solution, which is one part bleach to four parts water. Disinfectants aimed at bacteria and other complex life forms do not reduce virus counts. While the American Center for Disease Control and the World Health Organization have both recommended against ordinary people wearing masks because there aren't enough manufactured masks available for healthcare workers as this novel coronavirus escalates worldwide, the data suggests homemade masks significantly reduce the chances of virus-free people becoming infected and the chances of infected people passing the virus to others. The coronavirus transmits through the air, through inhalation. According to Jeremy Howard, a research scientist at UCSF, who published a piece in the Washington Post on March 28, research from Oxford University this March in 2020 indicated homemade cloth masks are effective enough that now hospitals who do not have access to manufactured masks are using cloth masks outside of COVID-19 units. Howard reminds his readers that the CDC and the World Health Organization have advised against citizens wearing face masks simply because the supply of them is so short and the priority needs to be medical personnel on the front lines of this pandemic. However, Howard goes on to say that directing people to not wear masks until they feel symptoms is not effective in containing COVID-19. Howard says when people wear masks in public, those who have the virus won't spread it as easily, and those who do not yet have it are much less likely to contract it when good hand washing habits are also used. A key skill in using face masks effectively involves keeping one's hands off of it. Only remove the mask when hand washing station is immediately available in case there is virus on the mask. While deaths have not yet begun to occur locally, it is logical to expect they will occur, and the importance of the time Humboldt County has had to socially distance may prove to be valuable due to flattening the natural doubling time of COVID-19. In the United States as a whole, ABC News reported on March 11th there had been 37 deaths from COVID-19. However, by March 28th, a mere 17 days later, the United States saw about 500 deaths in a single day. Chuck Todd expressed this on Meet the Press Sunday. He said, "It took from February 29th to March 17th, 18 days to get to 100 deaths. It took another 9 days to get to 1,000 deaths. Sadly, it took 72 hours to get to 2,000 deaths." While the peak may slow as the results of social distancing measures take effect, clearly this illness is dangerous, and vigilance in avoiding the virus remains the primary tool to contain it. This is Kelly Lincoln reporting for KMUD News. Please, everyone, stay safe. Use your social distancing and your hand washing and your face masks.
State Senator Mike McGuire visited the Northern California Community Blood Bank on Friday to promote blood donation amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. Isabella Vanderheiden reports.
The COVID-19 pandemic has impacted all of our lives in various ways, but local blood banks across the country, like the Northern California Community Blood Bank in Eureka, have seen a significant decrease in blood donations since the outbreak hit the United States.
When COVID struck and people started to worry, some of the first things that happened were that schools closed, and we collect more than 30% of our blood from schools, both colleges and high schools. And then people age 65 and older were recommended to self-quarantine. That's another 30% of our blood supply right there. So right off the bat, more than 50% of our total collections were impacted. So we saw a big drop in donations, and we saw a lot of blood mobiles being canceled.
That's Kate Whithouse. She's the CEO of the Northern California Community Blood Bank. The blood bank serves hospitals from Crescent City down to Garberville and over to the clinic in Willow Creek. After the 50% drop in blood donations, the blood bank was critically low and put the word out to the community.
And we're starting to get good community response, so we're no longer critically low on blood, but we're going to need to continue to collect blood throughout the next coming weeks and months. And as you know, these are uncertain times, so we're still asking people to come in.
So what happens if we run out of blood? Thankfully, Whithouse says that has never happened here.
Blood banks across the United States share with one another in times of crisis. So if there's a localized emergency in one area, blood banks from other areas will ship blood to help them. The reason that the COVID-19 crisis is different is that it's not a localized emergency. It's a national and a global emergency. So all blood banks are low. So far, we've been able to get through that situation and collect the blood that we need. But when you ask what happens if there's no blood, if you look at other countries that don't have a robust blood supply like ours, Nigeria, for example, people die in the hospital every day from childbirth complications and bleeding disorders because there's not enough blood.
And the need for blood does not go away, even in a pandemic. Senator Mike McGuire partnered with our local blood bank about 2 weeks ago to promote Friday's blood drive.
We know that across Northern California, approximately 50% of all community blood drives have been canceled, which has ushered in a critical shortage of blood throughout the state and right here on the North Coast. About 50%, about half of all the supply that comes into the blood bank here on an annual basis is coming from community blood drives. And due to the coronavirus, those community blood drives have been canceled, which is why we thought it was so important to do an all-call of the community. And like Humboldt County does, each and every time there's a need, they answer the call. As of this morning, we had 40 slots filled, and we are so incredibly grateful.
And beyond blood donation, Senator McGuire says his team has been working with communities throughout the district to ensure everyone has what they need.
We're working with each and every hospital on the North Coast to make sure that they have the protective gear they need, to make sure that they have the ventilators they need and the medical equipment to be able to keep their staff safe and patients healthy. So we are constantly checking in with all the CEOs on the North Coast and right here in Humboldt County. Two, we're working with school districts across the North Coast. If they're going into a spring break period, that they have adequate food supplies, we've got to continue those critical meals twice a day during spring break. So an issue that came up earlier this week is that Ukiah Unified did not have enough food to be able to sustain their kids through upcoming spring break. So we mobilized, talked with their food distributor CEO yesterday, and just this morning at 7 a.m., a large food distribution truck drove into the school campus and delivered nearly 6,000 meal kits that will be distributed for kids throughout spring break. We're working with all the Office of Emergency Services on food distribution efforts and mobilizing the National Guard. So talked with Ann Holcomb with Food for People last night. She has an amazing volunteer base, but they tend to be around 65, right? Many retirees who aren't leaving the house. Right thing to do, by the way. She needs help getting out to all of the rural communities that Food for People serves. So working with her, we're putting her order up through the state system to be able to bring in the National Guard, to be able to help food distribution, bringing in trucks and some personnel to make sure that we're not missing a beat when it comes to food. And then the other really significant focus is making sure that we have the budget to be able to respond to this virus.
Blood donations are always welcome. More information on the Northern California Community Blood Bank can be found at nccbb.net. Reporting for KMUD News from Eureka, I'm Isabella Vanderheiden.
SoHum Housing Opportunities board member Kathy Miller called into KMUD News to share an announcement today about their nonprofit's effort to shelter those without housing at this time of sheltering in place.
Hi, this is Kathy Miller, and I'm with SoHum Housing Opportunities, referred to as SHO. And SHO is a local nonprofit organization that is involved in assisting people in need of housing and other basic needs in Southern Humboldt area. With the help of a grant from Humboldt Area Foundation, SHO will be assisting local houseless people during the COVID-19 crisis. in an effort to help people be able to shelter in place to prevent the spread of COVID-19 virus. For at least the next 2 weeks, SHO will be sheltering 20 houseless people who've been identified as the most vulnerable by paying for 10 shared motel rooms in Southern Humboldt. We'll be providing these 20 people with some daily food assistance also, starting this Friday, April 3rd. In addition to the 20 people who will be sheltered in motel rooms, there are still some 200-plus houseless campers in Southern Humboldt, according to the last place and time count done in 2019. And these people need to shelter in place as well. So this means that people would have to stay in their camp areas as much as they can. Efforts have been made by houseless activist and SHO board member Patty Ray, who's coordinating this program, to have the camps prepared for this situation as much as possible. Like all of us, houseless people need to protect themselves from getting the virus, and if they've been infected, they need to keep from spreading it. We realize that this will be difficult for people who are camping and are in need of food assistance. So unable to assist with that happening, SHO plans to provide houseless campers with water and food during this time, distributed right to the trailheads of their camps so that there will be a decreased need for campers to leave their campsites. SHO volunteers will be putting together expanded bagged lunches for 2 days a week to be distributed to the trailheads. It's not much, but it's a start, and we think it should help. I just want to add thanks so much to Patty Ray for her hard work and dedication in facilitating this, both of these efforts. Patty is an outstanding volunteer and activist, as well as a member of the SHO Board of Directors. If people would like to donate, volunteer, or keep up with the work of Soham Housing Opportunities, they can go to Soham Housing Opportunities on Facebook page for more information. They can also donate to Soham Housing Opportunities account at the Vocality Credit Union account number 000-196-7919. Again, that's 000-196-7919. Thank you very much.
Again, if you would like to learn more about Soham Housing Opportunities, commonly called SHO, you can look on Facebook. Or if you would like to contribute to their cause, you can donate at Vocality Credit Union in Garberville to account 196-7919. Earlier this Friday, the Humboldt County Office of Education, or HCOE, announced that all county school programs will close their facilities but continue distance learning instruction, providing students with meals, and working on systems for child care. Humboldt County Superintendent of All Schools, Dr. Chris Hartley, stated, quote, "Our main priority is the health and safety of our students, families, and staff. Social distancing remains critical as cases of COVID-19 continue to increase. And while we recognize the difficulty and challenges this poses to many, maintaining closure of school facilities is prudent and allows our educators and HCOE to continue developing and improving distance learning education. School is not over. Humboldt County schools are the heartbeat of our communities. They will continue to provide essential services for students and families by embracing innovation and collaboration." End quote. All HCOE school programs will remain physically closed. Local districts will be working to weigh local needs and state and local recommendations in determining their district plans for distance learning and closures. Yesterday, the Southern Humboldt Unified School District announced they will close all school facilities for the duration of the school year, but maintain distance learning and meal deliveries. Future in-person events, including graduation and prom, will be evaluated as time progresses. News, information, and resources for families, including meal distribution schedules, are available and regularly updated online at hcoe.org/COVID-19. Earlier this Friday, the College of the Redwoods, or CR, announced, quote, "In response to the COVID-19 pandemic, the Mission Asset Fund created a $500 California College Student Emergency Support Fund. This is a one-time $500 hardship grant for currently enrolled, low-income, full-time students at CR who have already completed 24 semesters. The fund was created to support educational continuity and degree completion for California's college students through this crisis. Undocumented immigrants, foster youth, and those with housing insecurity are encouraged to apply. Students can apply for the grant online at missionassetfund.org/ca-college-student-grant. Mission Asset Fund cautions, quote, "We encourage interested students to apply as quickly as possible, as these funds will go fast," end quote. Also, in an effort to ease the burden on the local healthcare community, CR's manufacturing technology professor, Mike Peterson, has started producing plastic visors for face shields on the college's 3D printer. After Stratasys, one of the largest 3D printer companies in the world, started to receive orders from hospitals across the country for face shields, they asked anyone with a compatible printer to help answer the call. CR received the request for printed face shields from Mad River Hospital. CR's Dean of Career Education, Carrie Mayer, stated, quote, "Even though the 3D printing process is a slow one, we're happy to be able to provide those 4 extra shields per day in support of our healthcare workers who are putting so much on the line to take care of our community," end quote. In response to a request from St. Joseph's Hospital in Eureka, the College of the Redwoods Dental Assisting Program has also donated personal protective equipment and supplies to St. Joseph's Hospital. Open Door Community Health Care Centers have adapted their services to telehealth, secure video conference calls, and have opened a dedicated drive-through clinic in Eureka for patients with respiratory symptoms indicative of COVID-19. Medical professionals are triaging patients at the drive-through clinic in Eureka, which is not a drop-in service, but for established open-door patients who call ahead. Open Door Chief Executive Officer Tori Starr shared this statement.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Tori Starr, the CEO of Open Door Community Health Centers. We want you to know that if you're not feeling well, to please reach out to your clinic site and let them know that you would like to be seen. We have a variety of ways to serve you during this time. Most of the time we are trying to do things remotely for your ease and for your own safety, so either via a telephone or a video visit. However, we are open to be able to see people in person if needed, but you will need to contact the health center first so that we can make arrangements to have an appointment for you so that we can serve you in the safest and most optimized way. So once again, I want you to know that we're here to help you, and please reach out to us if you have any needs. I wanted to let you know about our drive-through clinic that we have established on Boone Street in Eureka. As part of our ongoing efforts to serve the community during the pandemic, we have set up our site on Boone Avenue to make sure that we can take care of folks that are experiencing respiratory symptoms or need testing. So if you fall into that category, we would like you to contact your healthcare provider in clinic, and we will make arrangements for you and set up an appointment so that you can come to the clinic at a designated time, and our team will be there and ready to serve you in any weather. So we wanted to show you that this is our continued commitment to be able to help serve you during this time of need within our community. So thank you, and we'll continue to do good work together.
If you would like to schedule an appointment with Open Door Community Health Centers, you can call ahead at 707-441-1624. Yesterday, the City of Eureka Mayor Susan Seaman provided an update on the city's new moratorium over evictions.
Hello, I'm Mayor Susan Seaman. As I watch my colleagues placing the highest level of concern on supporting our citizens, community, and our local economy through their every action during this challenging time, there are a couple of topics that warrant some additional explanation. Today, I want to take a moment to discuss the city's new eviction moratorium. On March 27th, Governor Gavin Newsom issued an executive order banning the enforcement of eviction orders for renters affected by COVID-19 through May 31st. This moratorium is designed to keep people in their houses if they have suffered from an unexpected income loss that would leave them vulnerable to eviction and stops evictions that are due to non-payment of rent. To protect public health and prevent the transmission of COVID-19, it is essential to avoid unnecessary displacement and homelessness. On Monday, Eureka City Council passed the Eviction Moratorium Ordinance, which went into effect immediately and will remain in effect through May 31st. The city will also have the ability to extend the effective period of this moratorium as needed and will continue to monitor the situation locally. Right now, and for the duration of the moratorium, landlords cannot evict tenants for non-payment of rent or no-fault eviction. However, in order to qualify for delayed payments, tenants must notify their landlord in writing of lost income and their ability to pay the full rent. They must also provide documentation to support their claim. Claims can be supported with documentation that demonstrates loss of household income due to being sick or caring for someone that has fallen ill with COVID-19, layoff, loss of hours or business resulting from the COVID-19 or state of emergency, compliance with a government recommendation to stay at home or self-quarantine during the state of emergency, caring for a minor child affected by school or child care closures, discontinuance or reduction of a government aid program. It is important to note that tenants are still required to pay lawfully charged rent and will have 180 days following the ordinance expiration to repay any delayed payments. Tenants and landlords can work together to arrange a payment schedule. If you're participating by postponing rent, I would encourage you to find a way to save at least partial payments when possible. Set it aside in a savings account or work out a partial payment plan with your landlord if they're willing. This will help alleviate having the burden of the whole cost at the end of the crisis. The ordinance also suspends shut-off water service for residents and businesses due to non-payment, late penalties for delinquent water and/or sewer bills, and increases in rent. I invite you to review the full ordinance and additional COVID-19 updates on our website, ci.eureka.ca.gov. I'll continue to share updates about how the city is supporting our citizens, community, and local economy as more information becomes available. In the meantime, be safe, stay healthy, and take good care of yourself. We'll talk again soon.
Again, that was Eureka's Mayor, Susan Seaman. You can find more information from the City of Eureka online at ci.eureka.ca.gov. Earlier this Friday, California Governor Gavin Newsom signed an executive order that will restrict water shutoffs to homes and small businesses. The order protects customers who may not be able to pay for their water service from shutoffs. The governor stated, quote, "This executive order will help people who have been financially impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic by ensuring they have water service. Water is critical to our very lives, and at this time, it is critically important that it is available for everyone." End quote. Also, Governor Newsom's latest order will restore water for occupied residences that may have had their water shut off as of March 4th, which is when the governor proclaimed a state of emergency due to COVID-19. Here in Southern Humboldt, a local water agency, the Garberville Sanitary District, or GSD, is working on replacing damaged water and sewer lines. Much of the district system is very old, and the GSD are proposing some rate increases from their customers to help fund replacing leaking, rusted, or inadequate infrastructure. Last week, the GSD held their monthly meeting via teleconference, and Board President Linda Broderson encouraged the people to connect via phone calls.
Well, I just think that, again, it's communication. If you have questions, call and ask the questions. Don't assume something. Call for clarification. Yeah, we're all in this together. We're not here. I mean, we're here to make sure that we have safe drinking water for our customers and we have a sewage system that works properly and that we can provide water to our customers.
You can call the Garberville Sanitary District office at 707-923-9566. Their general manager, Ralph Emerson, explained why the GSD recently replaced a sewer line that crosses Redwood Drive at its central Garberville intersection with Sproul Creek Road.
We have identified that area across the intersection of Redwood Drive and Sproul Creek Road as a problem area. It had manholes that were built out of river rocks, and they were just concreted together. So it wasn't real solid in places. And there was broken pipes in the middle of that section that we would find pieces in the manhole. So we knew the pipes were broken. And so because we've had to clean that section on a regular basis, it was felt that was critical to replace and have a new pipe going across the intersection so we don't have sewer plug-ups or broken pipes or sewage going into the ground.
And is that project still happening? Is it buttoned up?
That section is completed. The ones that are causing the most problems we're fixing first, and then we'll try and have a plan. If we can get grant money, which will help, we'll be able to do larger sections at one time. Otherwise, it'll be whatever the budget allows us to do each year, doing smaller sections.
The recent replacement of sewer line in central Garberville is one of many projects the GSD wish to fund. The district is managing a system that was originally owned by three different companies and patched together into one. The GSD estimates that every year, about 14 million gallons of water they have pulled from the South Fork of the Eel River is lost through leaks, which cannot be found. This fact was addressed by General Manager Emerson when asked by a member of the public, Kristen Vogel.
Yeah, but is it very clear to this district how 14 million gallons is being lost?
It is very clear to the district. If you had never brought it up, we were looking at it before that. So I'm concerned. I've been looking at it for 5 years. I want to know what we treat. I want to know what goes through a meter. I want to know where the loss is in the meters. I want to know where the infrastructure leaks are. And I want to know what goes in the wastewater plant. So that's why we replaced the Alder Point water tank. Is I want to know every leak, and I want to replace and repair. That's part of this infrastructure upgrade, is replace everything that's leaking. We've had leak detection done twice in the district since I've been here, and we're trying to isolate spots that are problem areas and have those repaired. But it's an ongoing process because this system hasn't been upgraded since it was built. In the 30s, some of it.
Yeah.
So it's a concern. And we're not backing off of it. They were taking tests today of an area we have concerns in.
Well, my main concern from day one, having been here now for 10 years, is that most of the energy of this district has gone to what I call, leapfrog development for starters with the big annexation. And now...
Well, that's a comment.
So. Yeah, so I'm just saying, how can you really put money into an infrastructure that's old and decrepit and falling apart when you're so busy getting more properties into the district and more water being sold out, you know, into the new
area.
That's
a good question. That's why the developers are paying for it. So I appreciate that question.
General Manager Emerson later confirmed that renovations to water and sewer connections in downtown Garberville at buildings on the corner of Redwood Drive and Church Street were recently completed with financial backing from the building owner. The GSD is currently appealing to state agencies for millions of dollars of grant funding for the replacement of outdated water tanks and pipelines across most of their coverage area. Garberville Sanitary District is planning to alter customers' rates to ensure plenty of funds will be available for replacing infrastructure. However, customers on fixed income over the age of 65 can pay discounted rates.
There's a couple factors that went into this rate study, and one was we were concerned about elderly people on fixed incomes and no way to generate more income, and what a rate increase would do to them, because some have a difficult time paying their rates currently.
Correct.
Their service charges now. So we felt it was important to have some kind of an ordinance that would allow older customers to be able to get a reduction if they requested it and they met the qualifications of income and age. And that also was on our website under billing ordinances procedures. So that is an option for those customers in that category. And then another concern we had was those that perhaps for their business require a large amount of water, and you know how that impacts them if they try to keep their business open, especially in this economic downturn and for this community. So how would that affect their business if they got a large rate increase? So that was also a factor we had to consider.
To find out more about discounts for GSD customers over the age of 65 and to look at proposed rate increases, you can look at their website, garberville.sd.org. If you click on the tab Rate Study Service Fees, KMUD News will bring you a deeper look at the proposed changes later this month. On a recent poll conducted by the National Federation of Independent Businesses, 92% of small business owners were negatively affected by COVID-19, which is a 12% increase over the course of 10 days. According to the poll, half of small employers are saying they can survive for no more than 2 months, and about one-third believe they can remain operational for 3 to 6 months. Among negatively impacted small employers, 80% report slower sales, 31% are experiencing supply chain disruptions, and 23% report concerns over sick employees. So far this year, 335 businesses in Humboldt have reported a revenue loss that exceeds their revenue loss from 2019. So far in 2020, 335 businesses report losses over $13,125,000. Those businesses in Humboldt that have so far reported also attribute over $4,458,000 of revenue losses to the COVID-19 pandemic, and over 1,000 jobs have been thus far reported lost due to recent events. Laura Lassiter directs operations of the Southern Humboldt Business and Visitors Bureau, who are meeting with the County Ad Hoc Economic Development Committee every morning. Lassiter and the Ad Hoc Committee are coordinating resources for businesses that are currently facing hardship.
What we're trying to do is help navigate them to resources that are available. Our SBDC up north is probably the best resource. The DHHS website, there are numerous loans that are available. There are loans that are available that if you have employees that you're still paying, at the end of those loans can be forgiven as far as or payroll loans. So we're really trying to help our business owners and individuals, you know, just this last weekend with the new plan that was rolled out. Now private contractors are available for unemployment, which is awesome. That was not an option. So really trying to get everyone in the best place they can to access what resources are available.
So far, on the Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services Economic Impact Survey, 9 businesses in the county have reported they have permanently closed due to recent events.
Yeah, and that was discussed on yesterday's call, but because of privacy, and that's, I think, one of the first things on the survey, that information is not out yet. But I know, you know, our resources down here, our Southern Humboldt Chamber of Commerce is doing their best to get everyone to fill out that survey as well. We encourage all our small business owners to do that. It will just help in this process.
Laura Lassiter believes the Southern Humboldt community's ethics of self-reliance will allow a quick bounce back from sheltering in place.
But we also know that, you know, Southern Humboldt self-reliance, self-sustainability has been part of our culture for decades. That's part, a big part of what makes Southern Humboldt so strong. So I see us as emerging from this and helping others learn about some of our best practices that are carrying us through these crises. And what we can do. So our board has met a couple times, you know, over the phone, of course, and we're working on some different SOHUM solutions and what we can do to help other communities that aren't as self-reliant as we are here. I cannot imagine that our message of open air, our redwoods, fresh air, our Lost Coast isn't going to be more of a draw. But only when that time is right and when that's safe for everyone and when everyone feels comfortable. And, you know, I think that goes for, you know, our cannabis as well, you know, our Appalachians, where is that cannabis grown? How is that grown? I think these questions that we've always understood to be important are probably going to be even more important for the rest of the world.
Laura Lassiter shared some closing thoughts as the director of the Southern Humboldt Business and Visitors Bureau.
You know, follow the orders that are coming down. Look to the SBDC and our Department of Health and Human Services. They're great resources that are available, and we will do our best to help keep the community informed. And if there are any questions, please feel free to reach out. And if we don't have those directory, we will help source those out or lead you in the right direction. So, and this is ever-changing. Part of our daily calls are because things are changing, as we know, by the minute. So we are doing our best to help stay informed and keep Southern Humboldt informed.
You can find out more about their bureau on the World Wide Web at ElevateTheMagic.com. If you own a business in Humboldt County and would like to contribute your experiences to the Economic Impact Survey, you can do so online at hccovic19economicimpactsurvey.questionpro.com. If you would like to connect with the North Coast Small Business Development Center for support for your business in Humboldt County, you can look online at northcoastsbdc.org or you can email admin@northcoastsbdc.org or you can call 707-445-9720. On Tuesday, March 31st, the U.S. Treasury Department announced the Paycheck Protection Program that will provide for Americans employed by small businesses, by authorizing up to $349 billion towards wages and necessary expenses. Small businesses and eligible nonprofits, veterans, organizations, and tribal businesses, as well as individuals who are self-employed or independent contractors, are eligible if they meet certain standards. The Paycheck Protection Program provides small businesses with funds to pay up to 8 weeks of payroll costs, including benefits. Funds can also be used to pay interest on mortgages, rent, and utility costs. The U.S. Small Business Administration is now offering loans that will be fully forgiven when 75% of the funds are used for payroll costs. Forgiveness is based on the employer maintaining or quickly rehiring employees and maintaining salary levels. Forgiveness will be reduced if full-time headcount declines or if salaries and wages decrease. Loan payments will also be deferred for 6 months. No collateral or personal guarantees are required, and no fees should be charged by the government or its approved lenders. Starting this Friday, April 3rd, applications are welcome from small businesses and sole proprietorships with 500 or fewer employees, including nonprofits, veterans, and tribal organizations. Starting next Friday, April 10th, independent contractors and self-employed individuals can apply through any federally insured lending institution that is participating. You can also find out more online at sba.gov/funding-programs/loans/paycheck-protection-program, PPP. Or you can look at the KMUD News Facebook page. And turning to Mendocino. The Mendocino Office of Education has extended distance learning programs to the end of the school year and will keep school sites closed. According to Mendocino County Superintendent of Schools, Michelle Hutchins, public schools are an essential service, and as such, they will continue to provide educational instruction, meals, and other support to students, depending on district resources. Superintendent Hutchins stated, quote, "We will continue to collaborate with Mendocino County Public Health. If the situation changes and it's safe for students to return to the classroom, we'll do so, but I do not expect this to be the case. This is hard for everyone. I remain impressed with and grateful to local teachers and administrators who are facing this challenge with grace while coming up with creative solutions. And my heart goes out to parents who find themselves overwhelmed by the need to serve simultaneously as full-time stay-at-home workers and homeschoolers. Please remember, parents, that teachers remain available to support you and your student." End quote. California's public university systems are relaxing admission requirements and will work with California school districts to ensure that students are not penalized for COVID-19-related disruptions. For details about schedules, meal delivery, and more, please contact your local school district. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Michael McCaskill for engineering. And thanks to our reporters, Kelly Lincoln, Isabella Vanderheiden, and Lauren Schmidt. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, SoundCloud, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you'll see stories, links, documents, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, just give us a call at 707-923-2605, or you can send us email at news@kmud.org. If you would like to continue hearing KMUD News and all of KMUD's unique programs and those we broadcast on behalf of others, you can donate any amount you would like. Donations are accepted online at kmud.org, or you can call your pledge in at 923-2513 between 9 and 4, Monday through Thursday. Or you can mail your donation to KMUD at P.O. Box 135 in Redway. Reporting from our studios, I'm Tanya Horlick.